You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. More often than not, we're here to give advice. The common theme seems to be telling you what to do. Tonight, with my guests, we discuss what not to do. The things you don't want to do at work. With me tonight, Tracy Hinden from the law offices of Tracy M. Hinden practices out of San Francisco and represents employees in employment and labor cases. And Michael Wilson, Jr. at the San Francisco office of Ogletree Deakins represents private and public employers throughout all phases of litigation, both state and in federal courts. And tonight there's much to discuss. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, our toll-free number where we pay the freight is 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on the topic, which tonight is labor and employment. You're not tied to the exact point we may be in our conversation. And occasionally I'm remiss, I might forget to mention that we don't give specific legal advice. We're happy to take your calls. We're happy to give you information, teach you the general principles, things that will help guide you in your decision-making. But we're not going to know all the facts of your case. So we can't give you precise legal advice and form an employer relationship, form a lawyer-client relationship. But we're happy to talk with you. We're happy to give you all the information. If you have questions for my guests, again, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. But before we go further, I'm pleased to announce the return of Call a Lawyer Night. If you have questions for our Call a Lawyer, the number that will not place you on the air, the number that will give you a private one-on-one with an attorney who will give you something closer to legal advice, that number is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. And you won't be on the radio. Each of the lawyers standing by to answer your legal questions off the air are longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer, including with tax law and real estate law, Frank Adam in Pacifica. For estate planning, Janet Brewer, a certified specialist. Janet practices out of Palo Alto. Landlord-tenant law, we have Jessica Chalik from San Francisco. Practicing criminal law in San Francisco, David Bigelizen. And to give you information on patent and trademark law, Ron Rohde of Palo Alto. If your question involves bankruptcy law, Leon Bayer, certified specialist out of Los Angeles. And again, if you're calling for us on the air, you want to be here in the studio with us, our number is 866-798-8255. And with that, Michael Wilson, Tracy Hinden, let me welcome both of you to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. Thank you.
You know, this idea really started with you, Tracy, so maybe you could kind of get the ball rolling. We're always talking about what to do. And you pitched the idea of talking about the workplace and maybe the things that people shouldn't be doing there.
Yes, I did. So I was sitting there looking at a bunch of intakes that day, and we constantly talk about this in my office, what employees should not be doing in their office, in their workplace. And so, for example, whenever I'm training a new staff member who does intakes in my office, I'm constantly telling them, if we get an email from a potential client and that potential client, the employee, is using their work email address, do not respond to that email. So that's rule number one of what you should not do as an employee. If you are going to contact a lawyer, do not email from anything that your employer owns. So that means the email address they've provided to you, the computer they have provided to you, the phone they have provided to you. You have no expectation of privacy if it is something that your employer owns. Same thing, do not text from the phone that they have provided for you. Because later on down the road, when they have access to it and they have discovered your messages or discovered what you put up on Facebook when you were supposed to be working from their computer, you had no expectation of privacy. And when I'm talking about having no expectation of privacy, it means you were not legally searched. Maybe Jeff can talk about that further, being the criminal attorney in the room.
That actually scrapes into my area of expertise. And it's a very different situation when you're dealing with your government than when you're dealing with your private employer. Your rights are much greater when you're dealing with your government because the government's constrained by a whole lot more, a big document called the Constitution, which doesn't, for the most part, apply to anybody else, with a couple of exceptions. There's a couple of areas that they broadened it. But we refer to a search issue with the first analysis, does this person have a legitimate expectation of privacy in the area searched? We refer to as LEPIS, and that's what we're referring to. And that's what, Tracy, that's what you were just referring to, is LEPIS, the legitimate expectation of privacy in the area searched. And what privacy can you expect when you're using their phones or their computers? You know, the first thing that comes to mind is they probably have a record of when you were doing it.
I'm sitting here watching Mike smile, so he who represents employers will tell us next. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, no, you're correct. Most employers will tell their employees on day one via the handbook or via, you know, the policies that are given out that you don't have any legitimate expectation of privacy with the work phone, the work email. But we are in 2019, and there are some employers where sometimes an employee has a personal phone that they are agreeing to use for work. And so sometimes that can blur the line. But for the most part, you're absolutely right, Tracy. There's no expectation of privacy, and you can't get upset if later on we have the chronology and we have all of the emails and the data.
Now, Michael, I was going to turn it to you with the next follow-up to that. The obvious one that we all think of is if you're on Facebook and creating a record of just when you were on Facebook instead of working, obviously you have no expectation of the privacy that you're not working and that you're doing these other things. But what about content? Is that every bit as vulnerable?
I think so. I mean, I think in this day and age, especially if you're going to make comments about your employer because maybe you're unhappy about something or you're worried about something, you should understand that that is going to be something that will probably be discovered. That'll be something that'll be reviewed. And again, you shouldn't have any expectation that, well, because I posted it on my Facebook, it doesn't, you know, you don't have a right to look at it, employer. That's not how it works.
Oh, yeah. So I'm sitting here remembering the time in a mediation when I had a client and I had been representing her for many years at that point. And we had looked through every portion of her Facebook. And one of the first things that we do, because this is something else that you should not do, is you should not have open social media. And I say open, meaning unprotected. You know, you should have things set to private, especially if you are going to go on rants. And apparently she had not at some point. And she had put up some photos that were taken of her by her then husband. And, okay, taking racy photos did not mean that she consented to the awful sexual harassment that she later went through at work. But nevertheless, she went on this rant and was like, these were private photos that were taken in my home with my husband. And I'm like, and then you publicly put them on the internet. So, and apparently someone in her workplace had downloaded them long before she came to me, because I had never seen those photographs before. And I had thoroughly looked at everything in her social media accounts, as I do when any client comes to me. So that's another don't. Don't engage your private life, you know, out in the open world. You know, keep in some respect, you have to remember that, you know, employers are looking at these things.
Well, and to piggyback on that, I think the other thing, another sort of what not to do from the employer side is that if you are a supervisor or you're in management, be careful about who you are friends with on Facebook or who you're connected with on social media, because another problem that happens is that even if your social media profile is private, if you are communicating back and forth with a supervisor or sometimes your other colleagues, many colleagues, about certain key issues that may develop into a claim or may be related to a claim later on, understand that that stuff may become public as well, or one of your colleagues may turn that into HR or something like that. And so, again, even if you thought, hey, I've got a private profile, but if you're friends with everyone at work, so to speak, on social media, don't assume that it's going to be private as well.
And not that I would ever represent them, but don't do as the agents at the border or whatever. Don't create a private Facebook group, you know, to talk trash about people that you are supposed to be working with,
right,
or, you know, they're people they were allegedly supposed to be protecting or whatever they're supposed to be doing.
Undoubtedly,
that
will come to the light.
Yes.
Or even without mentioning by name, the idea that you might be trashing your employer and talking about the crappy place that you work, and then other people look over and say, hey, isn't that Tracy here that wrote that stuff? Is she talking about our work?
Yep. That's one of the first things when I'm looking at people's social media when they come to me is I'm like, and how many of your, if they're a current employee, I'm like, how many of your, you know, coworkers are still on your social media? And if they're a former, how many of your former coworkers are on there? Oh, but they're people I trust. Yeah, all's fair in love and war. And so be selective about who is going to be on your social media, because you never know what's going to come back later on.
And we trust them too.
That's exactly my point. And they have ways of making them feel very trusted. So I have seen the bestest of friends be turned in litigation. So maybe that don't would be, hey, look, I'm not the person who's out there to censor you in any way, shape, or form, and I'm not going to say that your First Amendment rights are going to be quashed. Believe it me, I'm constantly throwing things up in my world that I like to put out there. But that being said, just you got to be aware that, especially if you have things going on at work, you know, that might be one of the first places that is going to be harvest ground. So maybe don't make social media your soapbox or your journal.
Right. Or the internal office instant messenger, which I think a lot of people forget.
Oh, Slack and all those.
You know, because I think you think of email and I think you think of the phone, text messages, but the instant messenger is also fair game.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight's program is brought in conjunction with the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. We're looking at what not to do at work. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. And again, in the studio is 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, if that means if you're not in the city and you want to call us from outside San Francisco, our toll-free number where we pick up the freight is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on the topic. You're not limited to exactly where we are in our conversation. If you have a labor and employment question, we have two very, very good lawyers that are ready to jump at it. And again, if you're outside San Francisco, that number is 866-798-8255.
So I have another what not to do in the workplace, because it's illegal. But unfortunately, some people do come to me with these And sometimes it does help their case, and then I'm put in a, you know, a situation. But California, we are a two-party consent state for recordings.
That's actually not just the rules of evidence and what people can use and not use against you, but it's also criminal.
And that's
this is the overlap between our works. We need to have these conversations more often.
So I can't tell you how many times. I mean, it makes sense because a lot of clients that speak to me have been, you know, marginalized, and they're not in equal positions of power. So when people are forced into a situation and you have employers that are pushing them down and refusing to put things in writing or refusing to do things properly, like pay them properly or calling them names, and you know, you can't get it in any other way, no one's coming forward or anything like that, people will make recordings. But unfortunately, in California, we are a two-party consent state. So if you make a recording without the other party knowing that you are recording them, it is illegal in California.
Yeah, I would like to just add to that from the employer side. I think one of the things that's often forgotten is that employers normally, if there's an issue that they're aware about, they want to fix it. They do not want to be in litigation. And so one of the struggles with that is that sometimes if someone from the employer side is maybe trying to interview someone about an investigation, they may think that they need to record a person who they think has been less than truthful with their responses or has given some reason where they say one thing one day and then they change it up. But again, because we are in a two-party consent state, I think it's a good reminder that from the employer side, that's something that's a legitimate concern, but we still have to adhere to the rules and the laws, and we don't want to get anyone in trouble.
But that said, let me jump in for 1 second. As lawyers, we're looking at one-party consent, two-party consent. There are a lot of states where it's a one-party consent state, which means that they don't want third parties. They don't want interloopers listening, so they want at least one of the people to be involved. California is a two-party consent state, but the word consent may not be as broad as those of you listeners might be interpreting it. Your responsibility, if you're the one who wants to record it, is to make the other person aware of it. And making them aware of it at the start of the recording is enough. You don't need to give advance notice. You don't have to have them sign anything. But you probably want the recording to begin with the fact that you're advising the person that it's going to be recording.
Agree.
And I just want to respond to Mike's comment. We also have a lot of employees calling us that want to do the right thing and record those HR interviews because they don't think HR is on their side. So, but HR won't let it be recorded. So it's all, we've seen both sides of it. Let's put it that way.
I'll give you that.
But so here we are on what not to do in the workplace.
Right.
So, and along with the recordings, and when I've been saying recordings, I mean both video as well as audio. So that also includes setting your cell phone up on the desk and taking video of people out in the workplace. I've gotten both.
You know, I will add to that. It's not setting up a phone. It's not hitting record. And it's also not installing that software that sometimes people will install on a person's phone when they're not looking, so that way they can sort of record what that person is saying or doing, even if you're not present. And that's becoming, obviously, that delves into other privacy issues, but it's a problem that's coming up a lot more nowadays.
Yes.
And once again, I'm pleased to announce Call a Lawyer Night. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer, the number that will place you one-on-one with a lawyer, you will not be on the air. No one's going to hear you. That number is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. Each of our lawyers standing by to answer your legal questions off the air are longtime supporters of Call a Lawyer, including in tax law and real estate law, Frank Adam from Pacifica. From Palo Alto, our estate planning certified specialist, Janet Brewer. If you have a landlord-tenant question, Jessica Chalik practices landlord-tenant law out of San Francisco. David Bigelizen practices criminal law out of San Francisco. And Ron Rohde of Palo Alto practices patent and trademark. He's a patent holder. He also practices aviation law and is a pilot. If your question involves bankruptcy, Leon Baer of Los Angeles, a certified specialist. And again, that number is 800-525-9917. So we were talking about recording people. We probably don't want to do that. But interestingly, what I find is that if people are very, very much in each other's faces, they don't want the other one recording them. If people are taking a more reasonable tone, oftentimes somebody without clean hands might not want to be recorded. Do you find that that's what you see in the workplace? This is true on either way. This could go in either direction. We've had unreasonable employers. We've had unreasonable employees, and it's not a one-sided affair. But is that generally what you're finding, is that people that can talk reasonably probably don't need the recording, but they're usually willing to do it? And people who can't, either because they've taken an unreasonable position or perhaps the tone is quite a bit louder, less willing.
Well, I would say from the employer side, I think there's a couple things at play. One is obviously, again, from the employer side, they're normally trying to resolve an issue before it escalates. But at the same time, they also have to be careful. So whereas maybe they don't anticipate saying anything that would be nefarious if it was played back, there is still this worry in 2019 that someone could take a recording, play just a snippet of it or augment, you know, what said, and then next thing you know, it sounds like someone is saying, yes, please break every single law, when that's not the case. So I think there is a lot of fear. But again, if you are in an environment where there's trust, where the tone is correct, you know, you can take your notes like we used to back in the day, and that should be good.
Jeff, I think you've been listening in on some of my depositions, because I 100% have to agree with you. That's at least how it goes. So I was recently at one where I had to take some photographs of and wanted to record, actually, how somebody was behaving, because, yes, there was a lot of unreasonable behavior going on. But I think what you said was on point. When people are acting very erratically, they are the ones who are terrified of the recording, is what has been my experience. And that's why my clients who have taken recordings and presented them to me have shown them to me. The recordings I have viewed, whether they're video or audio, are obscene, screaming, name-calling, threatenings of deportation, you know, even when the person does not have a legal status issue. It's just horrifying. Callings of horrible names about a woman's body and threats of what they would do to her. Those are the recordings I have heard and seen. And when prompted, I'm going to record you, you know, that's when they freak out even more. And I really worry for the person's safety.
Isn't that kind of akin to telling somebody, now calm down, when they're agitated? It's like throwing gasoline on the fire.
It is. But the ones who call me that I don't believe have a case and say that, you know, they recorded people and all this sort of stuff, usually even if I've decided to go down the road of like, okay, fine, let me hear this for a second, it's people just sitting there. You know, it's so not what they expect it to be. You know, because I've also seen Sabrosa over the years too, that there's nothing going on there. And Sabrosa, for our listeners, is videos that are taken traditionally by an employer, either in a workplace injury situation or for whatever reason, to monitor to see if the employee is lying about what has happened.
The one point I'll add, though, is that I think in terms of what not to do, is I think when you're in an employment setting, it's always good to treat your fellow colleagues, regardless of their title, regardless of the situation, with respect. Many times there are employees who don't realize that maybe certain rooms have to be recorded for other reasons, security. And so maybe you don't hear every single word that is said if on a Wednesday there's video footage of somebody getting into an argument, but body language will oftentimes say a lot. So I oftentimes find that in discovery, people be surprised to find out, well, you were in a room where it was sort of noted that you might be recorded again for security reasons. Maybe there's, you know, it depends on the industry. And, you know, an employee or a plaintiff will claim that, you know, they were wronged and that they were spoken to in a certain way, but the video footage clearly shows that employee acting in a very overly aggressive manner while the, you know, somebody else is trying to calm them down, or their tone, their body language is definitely saying something different. So in terms of what not to do, you know, when you step into your place of work, just assume that your actions are being recorded. And I don't want to say it in that sort of negative way, but just assume that, you know what, it's possible that your interactions are being recorded for other reasons. And if it's played back, what does your body language say?
And let me touch on that for a second, too. If you are in a workplace situation where there is video, don't lie about what happened, because we will watch that video.
Exactly. Together at deposition.
We will watch that video. And most likely, the employer will watch that video before I can watch that video. And, you know, that's not going to be a fun day for me.
You know, kind of to something you said earlier, some of my favorite mediations, because, again, it just depends on the circumstances, where, you know, the plaintiff has claimed, again, that they were the one that was wrong, that the whole nine yards, and they're telling all this stuff, and lo and behold, there's video. And sometimes, again, depending on the industry and depending on what your job is, your place of work may not be within the walls of a building. You may have to patrol a neighborhood. You may have to do something else. There are people outside. They're always taking footage. You know, we see it with certain situations maybe involving police officers and maybe someone on the street. But sometimes it can involve other people, and you'd be surprised, because then we play the video at mediation for all to see. And that credibility goes down pretty quickly, and we can resolve the cases pretty quickly.
I would even take it a step further. If you're someone who fears people hearing what you say or seeing you as you say it, turn that up a notch. You not only have to worry about somebody hearing what you're saying, you need to think about somebody hearing three or four or five consecutive words in what you're saying, because that little snippet can be taken out of a recording or put into a recording. They could find you saying something, and you'll see it in your own words. You'll see yourself saying it, and it's quite opposite what you've intended to say. But there's three words or four words that get strung together that maybe you're stating the opposite position.
Right.
And that looks like that's your point.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So when we come back, I'd like to move on a bit. We've been talking about the general things that you don't want to do at work, and some of the things that maybe people aren't really thinking about. In the past, we've done shows involving employment where we talk about what to do when we're dealing with a complaint or dealing with a dispute at work, and the way that people should be dealing with it, and what happens step by step and the like. What we never talked about is, what's the last thing you want to be doing? What don't you want to do when a complaint's been filed? A complaint's filed against you and you decide this is the time to flame out? Probably not. But I think it goes more than that. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
You know, I mentioned what we want to go into next, but before we do, I'd like to remind everyone it's Call a Lawyer Night. If you have questions for Call a Lawyer, you want to talk to somebody but you don't want to be on the air, the number to call is 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. You won't end up on the radio, and each of the lawyers standing by has been supporting Call a Lawyer for quite some time, including Leon Bayer, a certified bankruptcy law specialist out of Los Angeles, Ron Rohde of Palo Alto, who practices patent and trademark and aviation law, as well as BBB arbitration law. Ron Rohde of Palo Alto. David Bigelizen of San Francisco practices criminal law. If you have a landlord-tenant question, Jessica Chalik of San Francisco, she's the one you want to talk to. If your questions involve estate planning or trusts or probate, Janet Brewer is a certified specialist out of Palo Alto. And if your question is involving tax law or real estate, Frank Adam is not only an attorney, he's an attorney, he's a real estate broker, a CPA. He's the man you want to talk to, Frank Adam. And again, the number that will not place you on the air, that will put you directly in touch with one of these fine lawyers, 800-525-9917. So, there's a complaint at work. I decided the person in the next cubicle is acting strangely. Maybe it's that one that wore the colander lined with foil over her head, or maybe it's the guy that's just leering over and acting weirdly. So there's a complaint. What don't we want to get involved with there?
Well, I am a big fan of telling people that call my office to make sure they document things. But I want to say, and to complain, and to update, but I want to caution within reason. This is not the time for those listening in the audience who remember Jack Handy's deep thoughts on Saturday Night Live. This is not the time to sit down and write out every single one of your deep thoughts to HR. HR is not your dear diary. So, and Mike is just smiling at me over there, but I'm telling you, sometimes people tell me, oh yeah, I already wrote a complaint, and I get this like 26-page complaint that was written to HR about every thought, hope, and dream ever thought of. There's an old adjective that says, don't tell them you're crazy, show them you're crazy, that whole bit.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. You want to be clear with your communications. Your employer can only do so much. And you are free to be at work and not be harassed or discriminated against and to be paid properly. So keep in mind your eye and keep your eye on the target. If you've made a complaint because someone is harassing you, or you've made a complaint because someone is discriminating against you, or you're not being paid all of your wages, make sure your continued complaints or comments are specific to that. If something is not getting resolved to those points, you can continue to comment on that. But if you think that every single thing that happens at work is related to your initial complaint, like someone going to the bathroom before you, or not getting a birthday cake when everybody else got a birthday cake, or not always being asked out for lunch or something, it may be because you're always complaining. And I say that with, as an employee rights lawyer, as someone who is saying to you, at some point, you do not want to complain all of the time.
So what Tracy seems to be saying is, if you want your complaint to be treated as a manifesto, you probably don't want to make it an 800-page statement on the human condition. How do you feel about that, Mike?
Well, I agree. From the employer side, I will tell you that there's a lot of what not to do. I think when you file a complaint because you have a legitimate concern, that's great. That's fine. Again, the employer wants to fix the issue and resolve it before it escalates and take whatever appropriate action. But what you should not do is tamper with potential witnesses. If you file that complaint saying there are three people who witnessed an inappropriate action, what you don't want to do is then go over to them and strategize to make sure that all of their stories are the way you want them presented, because we will find out that that's what you did.
But I want them to back me up.
But if it's the truth and three people were there on the date or the dates when something went down, that will come out naturally in an investigation. You do not need to go and have their stories line up. And many times from the employer side, they are frustrated because they will bring in the people who need to be interviewed and their stories are a little too, you know, in sync, down to the last minute detail in a way that doesn't make sense. So I think it's important to not sort of do your witness prep and prep all your witnesses. It's another thing to, you know, file a complaint and then all of a sudden sort of disappear. You won't respond to HR's request to meet. You won't come in to talk. Every response is, well, I don't feel comfortable. I'm going to, I need to wait until, you know, after work, and then I'm going to respond to you. Another thing is to send an email, again, from the work email, CCing, quote, attorney. Not a real person, just writing the words attorney in the email, thinking that that somehow, you know, especially if you're not represented, it's not a good look. And again, it impedes the investigation when an employer is trying to, again, get to the bottom of a situation and take appropriate action. So I think those are some of my the biggest things I see, again. But it's the witness tampering. It happens so much.
Seems to me that from the perspective of an employer, if you have a complaint to deal with or you have things going on at work, the bottom line, the first thing you're going to want to get to the bottom of is exactly what's the problem. And what each of you are telling me are examples where this employee puts in a complaint and may as well write in big letters on the bottom of it, by the way, I'm the problem.
Right.
Essentially.
Yeah, don't spread rumors, by the way, either, after you file your complaint, because in theory, you want an unbiased investigation. And so if you file the complaint, but then you sort of tell everyone in the office, by the way, I filed this complaint against so-and-so, it messes with office morale, but it also impedes the investigation. And it doesn't allow the employer, again, to get to the bottom of the situation, take corrective action as needed.
You know, this is not my area of law, but I've worked enough situations analogous to this that one thing really has to come, you know, I think it needs to be said, and that is never forget when you're filing a complaint and when you're acting on that complaint, never forget who your audience is going to be. Never forget who's going to be moving on and who's going to be making the decisions. Because so many times I've been in analogous situations where people want to rail on the decision maker themselves, and it's very counterproductive.
Right.
So, Mike, do you have any suggestions to the employer, though, the small business employers out there who are listening, like what they should not be doing once a complaint has been made?
Well, the first one is no retaliation. And as easy as that sounds, that is sometimes very hard to do in real life. As a small business owner, if you receive a complaint from one of your employees, and it may be about you as the head of this small company, the first thing is especially if you feel like you didn't engage in any inappropriate behaviors, that you feel wronged, and you may want to stay away from that person. You may want to sort of, you know, try to isolate yourself from that person. But what ends up happening is what you're actually doing is you're potentially engaging in behavior that could be then grounds for a retaliation complaint. And so the key is from whether you're a small company or a big company, take the complaint. Use it as an opportunity to find out if there's any merit to the allegations and get to the bottom of it. But at the same time, you treat that person the same way. Their duties are the same. Their responsibilities are the same. You don't make any special favors for them. But you also don't alienate them because, again, that will it will not bode well. It won't be a good look.
Having dipped a very cautious toe into these waters when I was representing a police agency and had a similar situation, that advice is very well taken. And one of the things that my client did, which I thought was a brilliant stroke, was to bring in somebody outside to conduct the investigation. Nobody gets their feelings hurt. Nobody gets emotionally involved. Nobody makes the wrong move. Get somebody who's detached to really look at it. And I would imagine from the perspective of an employer especially that would be the thing to do.
Yeah, and I think one thing to add to that is that, you know, a lot of bigger companies may have the personnel to conduct an internal investigation. But if you're a small business, and again, we all know that expenses and operating costs are what they are, and they're razor thin, if you can afford to get that independent investigation, it actually does two things for you. One is it gets to the bottom of the situation. But two, if it does end up in an actual, you know, court filing, you actually have a defense that you conducted. You had an independent investigation conducted, and that you took those recommendations and you implemented it.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight's program, brought in conjunction with the Labor and Employment Law section of the California Lawyers Association, looks at those things we don't want to do at work. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question regarding labor and employment. You don't have to jump into our conversation. And again, that number is 866-798-8255. Let me turn it over to Deborah in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. This is kind of a little bit of a different angle. I'm actually interested in having a person who has set a tone at a business that is a nonprofit that has sort of created a level of fear and intimidation and bullying. And this person has been kind of a tyrant for quite a few years, and a lot of people that are involved with them, including working for them as volunteers, find them to be very difficult, and they walk around on eggshells. I, and myself and several other people who are seniors have been exposed to this, and so a lot of people move in this arena with great fear. So in a situation where one of the participants in the same program ended up getting physical in a bullying situation in the program, the individual who was in charge of the program ended up actually mirroring more bullying behavior. And they have a habit of doing this, being impatient and aggressive. And that's why people don't bring issues and problems to them, because they know that they're very volatile and not open to hearing conversation. So I communicated with that person's boss as per procedural suggestion. And the individual who is above them has absolutely not acknowledged any communication, and neither the person who is the director or their boss has communicated with me at all since I brought to their attention the issues. Right now, I think it's pretty clear in that I communicated with the director that in addition to the issue with the individual, that their behavior was also problematic, and that many, many people at the shelter or at the situation would, if they were interviewed by professionals, as you suggested, an outside source independently, they would find this place as a landmine of people who have been abused for many years. So it's a very dangerous situation, but I'm not getting the feedback from the supervisor of the person that is the issue, and I'm not getting any traction. So it's now time to bump it up to the next thing. And there's actually enough communication I have with others that I'm trying to collect, not signatures, but independent descriptions of experiences they had at the same place, because I opened up Pandora's box.
Well, let me tell you, from what the expressions I'm seeing in the room, I think you're going to get the words "don't go there." But let me turn it over to Tracy and see if she can be of some help.
Okay.
Hi, Deborah. Hi. So thank you so much for your question. So first, let me just ask you quickly: have you spoken, or have all your communications been in writing only with the supervisors?
Yes.
Okay.
I've made it absolutely a point that everything is tangible.
Okay. So what I'm going to recommend first is that you put a letter together in writing to HR. So one thing I know about nonprofits is they have a board of directors. Uh-huh. And I have sued several nonprofits because they may be doing good work out there in the world, but if they're treating their employees crappy, I don't care who they are, I'll take them down. And I have sued many employers, as you've described. And so that being said, you need to put your complaint in writing. And
been there, done that.
Okay. So I had asked you a few seconds ago if you had put it in writing, and you said no, it was verbal.
Yes, absolutely. In writing. Everything is in writing.
Okay. Have you sent a complaint in writing to Human Resources?
No, because I don't have access to the information about the particular organization's human resources personnel.
Okay. Usually when you, on any of their websites, there's like a contact us. You can call the 800 number, ask for human resources. If you have an employment handbook, it should say who HR, like even the corporate number is in there. We usually recommend to callers or to our clients to call the 800 number, ask for, or if there's a fax number listed, send your complaint via fax. You want to put your complaint in writing, okay? That's the first thing you want to do. The second thing is, you've done a good job of at least, you know, talking to people about it, but you want to be careful about trying to rile up others and make the situation kind of more of a an us versus them kind of thing.
Okay.
Because at some point that division is going to break, and it could break against you, even though you're like, hey, I'm kind of trying to do the right thing here because I see there's physical violence and stuff going on here.
Yeah.
So I would, if others want to make their complaints, they can too. And that doesn't mean like turn around and tell them like everything I've said. It means like if they come to you and you find out information how to contact HR, you can tell them how to contact HR.
Okay.
You know? Okay, so they're
not soliciting them to do the action that I'm doing, but to tell them what I'm doing, and then, you know, if they choose to, they can then get in touch.
Correct. And if there is more physical violence that you visit or that you witness, that you personally experience, first of all, I'm really sorry. Second of all, were police involved?
No.
Okay. I would always recommend calling the police if there is physical violence involved. Okay?
Okay.
You're free to be at your workplace without being physically harmed by somebody. And if someone is harming you in a physical manner, we call the police, whether it's our workplace or it's our home. That's supposedly what they're there for, right?
It was covert physical contact. Covert. Meaning that it's meant for my own attention and to let me know that they could have access to me if I wasn't paying attention all the time. It didn't result in actual damage.
Oh. Okay. Well,
so
I'm glad
it was done with subtlety to send a message, and I got it very clearly.
Okay. Well, if you think that you are in harm's way, though, that is something you need to report to HR as well.
Okay.
Because you're supposed to be safe in your workplace. Okay.
Okay.
So that's what I would recommend you do. And
I'm actually tempted. I know that, you know, I don't know about the laws necessarily of recording, but I'm very, very tempted to do a constant recording.
So we're in a two-party consent state, meaning you have to at least advise the other person that you're going to record them. But if this person is as volatile or hostile as you've claimed, it might make the situation worse. So I really have to caution you against that.
Okay.
I would, like I said, I would advise Human Resources of what's going on, and I would possibly request a schedule change for you, at least, so that you can be kept safe and be away from this person.
Okay.
That would be my recommendation.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So, time's a little tight, but I'm going to open up the next area we talked about, which is what not to do during the course of the investigation. We started to talk about what not to do when a complaint's been filed, but now this investigation's undergoing, and what do you not do? I think we may have come a little close to that just now.
So I, one of the other things I always tell folks is remember that you still have rights to your privacy. So do not release all of your private information. There are some employers that believe that in order to investigate, for example, if you need an accommodation because you have a disability, that they need to access all of your health records. And they will tell you that they cannot investigate whether or not you need an accommodation, you know, as simple as a sit-to-stand desk, without going through every single one of your medical records. So one of my do-nots is do not sign a medical release. Do not sign any waivers that they put underneath your face. You can offer to have a doctor issue a note listing restrictions, or you can provide redacted versions of anything that may outline what your medical condition is, but you do not have to release your private medical records that has things like your gynecological records in it, or your blood history, or your family's medical history, just so they can provide you like a sit-to-stand desk.
One thing I will, slight caveat, I agree with what you're saying, but I think sometimes it's important to make sure that most of us are employees right out there. Just making sure that you also understand that sometimes if you want an accommodation, depending on the issue, there may be what's called a third-party provider that may be handling certain aspects. Maybe it's related to a disability issue, and that third-party entity may need additional information within reason to ensure that you get certain benefits, and if need be, certain select information is passed along to make sure that an accommodation is done at work. But again, feel free to read over those documentations. I agree with you, you don't turn over all your privacy, but it's important to just be mindful of that. So that's one. But I think in terms of the other situation, and the caller sort of mentioned this issue, let's say that that caller files a complaint with HR. And HR starts the investigation. What you don't want to do when you are being interviewed is be anything less than forthcoming and truthful. Too many times, when you are investigated as a part of a situation, you'll be less than truthful. You will omit certain details. You may throw a lot of darts at other people, and that will get you in trouble. And it could affect you as well. Most employers have a code of conduct where you are expected to be truthful in an investigation. So if you start lying and you seem to have selective memory about everything that may pertain to your actions, but you have perfect recall about what the alleged harasser or the alleged bad actor did, you don't look credible, and it could also lead to problems for you.
You know, we only have a couple minutes left, and the one thing we haven't really talked about is what about the employee that's no longer there? What don't you want to do?
Okay, so the employee who is no longer there, I would not recommend, especially if you're thinking about bringing a claim, you do not go on social media, our old friend here again, and trash the employer. You do not go out and text everybody under the sun about what's going on in your life and about how you're suing. You do not email former coworkers or colleagues, and you do not post on social media about what's going on in your life.
I don't really have much to add on that one. I think except for, you know, again, I guess the anti-disparagement and, again, trying to witness tamper. I have seen situations where an employee is no longer – or a person is no longer with the employer – but is still trying to line up witnesses, and they are emailing their friends who are still employed at the work email, trashing, but also trying to get stories to line up. Because again, those emails are not, there's no expectation of privacy in those emails that come into the work server. And again, if you're trying to do something nefarious, that will come to the light.
And I just want to talk about one thing about talking to witnesses. So, and when Mike is saying this, he's not saying you can't go and talk to your friends and say, hey, look, I made this complaint, and they may come and talk to you and remember that night when this happened to me. They're going to come talk to you about that. He's not saying you can't do that. He's just saying you can't sit down and say, okay, at 2:15 this happened to us, and at 3:15 we all looked and said this, and remember, Mike, you said this, and Joey, you were over here doing this. Remember that, Joey? Come on, you got to stick with me on this one. And so the reason why I'm okay with my clients talking to witnesses is I don't want them to like talk to me all of a sudden and then be like alarmed that all of a sudden the lawyer is talking to them. But I still think it's okay for them to know that they may be involved, they were a witness to something. But I always tell my clients, hey, look, they're probably not going to remember it as much as you do because it didn't happen to them. It's easier for them to put it out of sight and out of mind. So maybe the last do not give them a death sentence if they don't remember, you know, every little thing that happened, even though it was pretty awful if it happened to you, and you claim that you would remember if it happened to them. You know, people are human.
And with that, why don't you take about another minute, sum up any last thoughts you have, anything you want to add?
Well, I think from the employer side,
I was going to give you 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I'm kidding. Go ahead. Just kidding.
I think from the employer side, but I think this applies to anyone in the workplace. Again, most of us are employees. Again, it's about being truthful. It's about being forthcoming. And it's also about if you have a legitimate concern, report it. The reason why employers have HR is because while they make widgets or they do certain other things for their business, they want to make sure that their employees come to work and feel safe. They have invested in you. So if there's a problem, you let HR know so HR can take the opportunity to investigate it and make any corrective action. Just keep that in mind. No one is out to get you. It's about creating a safe space where, again, you feel like you can come to work and feel respected, but also give your employer that same sort of courtesy.
And remember, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. Tracy, would you like to sum up?
Yes, because I was going to say something along those lines. So while Michael's clients, you know, may be terrific and awesome, do remember that HR does work for the company. And at the end of the day, you don't have to share every single feeling and thought about what's going on with them. You are allowed to keep some of your emotions to yourself. Do share with them, you know, what needs to be told about this situation and your part or the other's part in it. But make sure that you keep some stuff private.
Let me add one more quick tidbit, which is, don't wait 20 years before you lodge your first complaint. That's another what not to do. And then you unload with the manifesto, right? Don't do that. If there's a legitimate concern, raise it at the first reasonable opportunity, again, so the employer can take care of it. If you wait until you've been hurt 15 times, that's a problem.
So if there's two things we learned tonight, one is be careful with social media, and the second is no manifestos. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight we've been discussing what not to do at work. With me in the studio tonight, my guests, Tracy Hinden, the law offices of Tracy M. Hinden, practices out of San Francisco and represents employees in employment and labor cases. Michael Wilson, Jr. at the San Francisco office of Ogletree Deacons, represents private and public employers throughout all phases of litigation. Thank you both for joining us. And our thanks to our panel for Call a Lawyer, Frank Adam of Pacifica, Janet Brewer from Palo Alto, Jessica Chilick from San Francisco, David Bigelizen from San Francisco, Ron Rohde of Palo Alto, and Leon Baer of Los Angeles. Thank you all. We'll be back next week with Your Legal Rights, where we will take on the law regarding cryptocurrency. Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. For production assistant Martin McLean and at the controls, Joanne Marr, I'm Jeff Hayden. Our thanks to you for listening, and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.